Let the spirit of the Kennedys
and the magic of the Disney brothers be with you always.
Blood and Business Legacy merch, available now.
Let's run faster,
work harder,
burn brighter
before we're gone.
Order your Blood and Business Legacy merch today.
At this point in her life, by 1960, Norma Jean wanted nothing more than to kill Marilyn Monroe. And by 1962, Marilyn Monroe killed Norma Jean.
When Marilyn finally moved close to the president, I suddenly realized that she had fallen in love with him. It frightened me because I knew Marilyn never did anything by halves. Trigger warning. Sensitive mental health topics including drug abuse, self-harm, suicide.
Oh my gosh. Do we want to talk about the worst places of Marilyn Monroe?
We need to talk about the Kennedy siblings. Episode 20. Welcome to Blood and Business.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Cassie. It's difficult to determine when Frank and Marilyn first met. She had always been a fan of Sinatra's. His friend, Joey Bishop, recalled the time Marilyn went to see Frank at the Copacabana. That's the night when she was like,
"What does that have to do with me? Of course we can get in."
And they got a front row seat.
Yep.
And Frank winked and kept right on singing.
Jim Whitting recalled, around this time in 1954,
this is
sometime in the 1950s, Marilyn was real dependent on Frank. There were many late night phone calls to him. She used to say,
"If I have any problem in the world about anything, there's only one person I know can help. Frankie."
Frank's feeling was, "Hey, if I can help out the dame, I will. She's a good kid."
Then we get to the real juicy part.
It's so fascinating to me, this life.
This life. Oh, I changed it to this life.
It's just so different. Wait, so did Frank and Peter, was that legit the end of their friendship? Or did they become friends again?
I am so confused. And if I were to look at history to predict the future, I would say they probably became friends again.
Yeah. Not Frank and Jack, but Frank and
Peter.
Peter and Pat.
Well, because Cal Neva.
That's what I'm saying. Would that not have been after he was cut off? That was after Bing Crosby, obviously. Obviously. So yes, they were friends again.
So yes.
I knew it because the end of episode.
People are who they are. That's just the thing.
People really don't change. I hate to say it.
A little.
Yeah, they can mature. Jack changed.
Yeah.
But did he really change? No.
Not a lot.
Your bones are there.
For sure. Outside the wonderful working miracle of God. But Frank and Peter and Pat were friends again.
They were friends again.
Charlie, I'm sorry.
Part two.
If you paid attention, you would have noticed that Cal Neva and that whole weekend was after the axing of the helipad and after Bobby called and was like, "Frank, you're cut off."
So he temporarily, in a fit of rage, cut off all ties with Pat and Peter. They were no longer friends, but for a moment. And then
Frank called her with one of his famous combinations of
an invitation and an apology.
An apology first.
Okay, an apology and an invitation. Whatever. But very, very, very Sinatra style.
Yep.
And
I love it. I love it.
Again. And of course, Peter and Pat said, "Oh,
couldn't say no.
No problem. Frank will be there." But I really do think that they truly loved
for sure
him and wanted the best for him and just rolled their eyes at his temper.
Yep. So that was in the episode and maybe some of you caught that, but it's just there's so much going on and so many back and forth timelines and like, wait, but back then there was this and then that was what was really happening behind the scenes. And it's just.
But I don't think a lot of people know that because most comments I've seen are Frank and Peter. When Frank kicked Peter out of the Rat Pack,
Yeah, permanently.
In 1960.
Which, I don't think Peter rejoined the Rat Pack, but it doesn't mean that him they and weren't Frank friends. Weren't friends.
And there are photos of him with the Rat Pack after.
Later.
Yeah. So I think they were all friends. I think it's just, that was an end of it. The end of an era. And to be honest, I don't even know how much they were in it to win it with that whole scene anymore anyways. Because of what happens next.
That will be for another day.
Another. But I think it, I really do think that Peter never recovered from losing Marilyn and then losing Jack and Bobby afterwards. It's just,
it didn't, man.
He was not
yeah.
the same Peter Lawford that was in the Rat Pack.
The coping skills were not in place.
Whose would be?
No one's.
Eunice.
Oh my gosh.
Supernatural.
And
she
guess
would have been
what?
A hell of a politician.
And guess what?
What?
She was freaking. After they began living together, Frank and Marilyn both admitted to still being loved with their estranged spouses. Therefore, for a time, there was nothing sexual going on between them. They were just sharing a vast common loneliness.
Wait, it was Joe DiMaggio for Marilyn and Ava Gardner for Frank?
Exactly.
Do you think that she was more in love with Joe than with Arthur Miller?
I think so, yeah. I hope. Arthur Miller was
horrible to her. Yeah, you also haven't talked about that. But is that for the minisode?
Yeah, that has nothing to do with the Kennedys.
Okay, well, it's fascinating.
See, and he dropped her and but Joe what's kept weird is, checking in.
Yeah, Joe kept checking in. But the fascinating thing is she's still, those two letters.
Yeah, to
Bobby,
Arthur's,
his son, and Arthur's dad. I something. His name, the dad starts, name starts with an I. But Bobby was the son. And yeah, she wrote to them like she was writing to a family member. And that was after they were already divorced.
Yeah. Issa Miller?
Yeah, Issa Miller.
I like that. I know. Issa Miller. Just sounds good.
It does sound good. Sounds like a writer.
Mm-hmm. Frank wasn't interested in anything more. Though it was difficult for his friends to fathom that he had one of the most beautiful and sought-after movie stars living in his apartment with him and was not intimate with her.
An apartment. I was imagining a sprawling mansion they like barely saw each other.
Yeah. Is this in New York? Like, why would in LA they have an apartment?
Yeah, he did live in New York.
As it happened, Marilyn had a habit of not wearing clothing around the house and didn't think to like alter her habits when she lived in an apartment with Frank Sinatra. Okay. Everyone who knew her knew that this was the case. She always said she would rather be naked. Her friends and staff were used to seeing her au naturel. Keep pulling, Milt.
Yeah. Keep pulling.
When she stayed with Frank during this time, she did not change that behavior. Quote,
Frank said that Marilyn was like a shooting star,
observed actress Esther Williams.
And you couldn't help but be fascinated by her journey. While you knew she was going to crash and burn, you didn't know how. However, you knew it was going to be a merry ride.
The only reason Sinatra wouldn't allow himself to be more serious about Marilyn, he had said, was because he was still so racked with pain about Ava. It was too soon.
Ugh, all of these. I'm so not a romantic at all. But I'm so sad about all these people who don't have family. And it's like they're so broken and they've got so many issues. But
misplaced and weird. But
yeah, but it's like they're best friends and mm-hmm. they love each other and they're married. But then it's not working out. And they both have really bad toxic traits and vices. And they're not treating
it's
each
like
other well
pouring
at all.
Lighter fluid on fire.
But I still am so sad when they get a divorce.
I know, me too. Divorce sucks. That's just horrible.
That's, and then they're so like they're all trauma. So in love with each other still afterwards.
Yes.
Frank is still in love with Ava.
Absolutely.
Pat never freaking remarried after Peter.
Joe
Peter
and Marilyn.
Peter never had a love again like Pat. And yeah, Joe, obviously, they were still best friends afterwards. Marilyn still wanted to be a part of Arthur Miller's family.
Yeah.
It's all so tragic.
It is.
Is Pat the only one who got a divorce in the Kennedys? No, Ted.
Yep.
And either of them get remarried?
Ted got remarried to Victoria, Reggie, whatever.
Something or other.
Did Jean get a divorce? I don't think
No, she didn't.
Yeah, no.
He died.
But they did have issues. I found out he for sure was sleeping around. And there was a rumor that she had an affair with the guy, I think, who the composer of the Camelot thing.
Oh?
Something like that. Something like that. Like Lemur or something like that. Lemur?
I have no idea.
People who know what I'm talking about are going to be like, anyway, they were like hanging around a lot and it was never confirmed, but people were suspicious about that. But it says that they, even after those issues, came back together. And the one thing that they had in common was that they were always dedicated to their children. Mm-hmm. And they adopted two girls after they had like marital issues. So they were still very committed to each other, or they recommitted to each other.
Yeah.
And they're like committed together.
To the family. And
yeah.
So that's interesting. So Pat for sure cheated.
Yeah.
Did they know that? Did we talk about that? I don't think so. Well, there you go. And the one fail swoop, Bobby and Pat become cheaters.
Oh no.
And Jean now probably. Jean is not confirmed, but most likely. Jackie never cheated.
Correct. And I found more evidence that, like, there was a bunch of rumors about Jackie cheating, and people were always like, who is it? Is it you? Is it this person? Is it that Secret Service? And I don't think she did. I think that, like, I've read that there's just no evidence of that.
And there's seems to be, like, evidence against it because of her conversation with Lee when Lee cheated. Jackie was, like, absolutely not okay with it.
Yeah.
And Janet, like, didn't raise them thinking that cheating was okay. And even after Jack died, she dated someone like a year later.
Yeah,
and then ended it because she still felt like she was committed to.
It was too close. Jack. Yeah, it was too.
So it's not like she just.
Yeah, you're right. She definitely had a large moral.
Like it was like a
conviction.
Full-on, yeah, covenant, like sacred thing for her.
Uh-huh. Like Bobby. I just think that Bobby like made excuses to be like, well, these people are all sleeping with people for no freaking reason. And I actually am emotionally connected to this person or something like that. You know what I mean?
I think
he probably like got into it
boil
and then
him.
And then he probably also ended it.
Yeah.
I could imagine him just waking up one day and being like, what am I doing?
That's the thing. He put himself out there so much that it's like you're bound to connect with someone else.
Yeah.
And it would be so easy to justify, like, I'm helping more people. I care about these people.
Yeah.
And then you just get so far to where you're like, actually.
And that's why you don't do that. I don't think he should have even talked to Marilyn. Like, it wasn't his responsibility. And.
Well, that family definitely doesn't have boundaries.
For sure.
Like all of the Kennedys, but that's just so hard because he felt so responsible for his brother because he was. That is the role that he played.
Yeah. His brother's keeper, cleanupper, clean up on aisle Jack.
Anyways, okay. So Ted was a serial cheater.
Yeah.
More so than even Jack was. And then Jack was.
Dude, there are some embarrassing stories about Ted, but we'll talk about that next episode.
And then, well, since this is the supposed to be cheating episode,
should I tell it now and not next episode?
No, you should tell it. But I'm saying but let's run through the siblings, who all cheated and who didn't, and who we actually
start
don't
with
know about.
Number one, Joe Jr. Yep, check.
He didn't cheat himself, but he was the mistress to a woman who was married with children, whose husband was serving. In the
same
war
he was fighting in. What in the world?
Joe He's a romantic Jr. and he outed himself in his affair.
Yeah.
To protect Kick. I feel like he was a little bit more like Bobby, or would have been a little bit more like Bobby. Like,
definitely.
Way more emotional.
I think his Catholicism allowed him to be like, well, it's okay because I can go to confession and Jesus loves me anyways.
And it was like the end of the freaking world.
Yeah.
It's like you convince.
They're like all gather around a piano singing Christmas songs in July because
you like,
they don't know if they have
so
another month.
More likely to indulge. Why Jack had so many. Indulge, kid. You're going to die.
Sooner than most.
Maybe tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just feels so like number those two decisions were less important.
Obviously, Jack was like blackjack. Third, Rosemary absolutely
did not
kick. She was like her big brother, and she was la mistress. So stupid.
At least she didn't cheat on Billy.
Yeah,
saint of a kid.
Mm-hmm. Next, Eunice.
Not that we know of.
There's
and
no
I
way.
Really would have
with her
to.
Ripped pantyhose and her crinkled skirts. I just don't. Think
I don't
so.
Even think she was really interested.
I agree. Clearly,
I don't even think she could
but
have been.
Did
her own.
You? But do you like him? Do you like him? Well, of course I did. I married him. Right, but I'm just asking, like, for real. Do you like him? Like, honestly,
of course I like him. I married him.
I love that.
But I mean, for real. So Eunice is, that's a big fat no.
No. Then
Pat.
Yeah.
She did. But I really don't think that she would have if Peter was fully committed to her like Sarge
was.
Oh,
I also agree. I don't think she would have. Agree.
And then Pat and then Bobby.
Bobby. One time.
We think. And it was definitely a different kind of affair than.
So
he was
sad.
Not a serial cheater.
It was
by
like,
any,
yeah, it was not
in
a serial cheater.
Was, and it wasn't, I don't even think about the sex. It was about
it was
the,
a stake
like,
in the heart. Oh, that's so sad.
He let himself get in too deep emotionally with
that's
someone.
That's so sad. That makes me mad.
And then there is Jean.
I think she had one affair also, like her brother Bobby. It's not confirmed. But they were hanging out too much, you know?
I really don't think any of the girls would have cheated.
Agree.
Even Kik, I don't think she would have cheated. Their husbands were just cheating.
I don't know. You think Kik?
You think that she would have cheated?
Yeah. I think she liked to feel especially special. Yeah. Eventually, I'm pretty
but
sure.
See, I feel like she's so like Jackie.
No.
You don't think so?
No. I think she was a lot more Catholic than Jackie. I think she had a lot more convictions than Jackie. I think she also betrayed her convictions when it felt good and when she wanted to have fun and feel especially special.
I guess, yeah, she probably would have cheated if Billy would have.
Yes.
Okay. Kik probably would have cheated. Kik was the only one that probably would have cheated.
Yeah.
And then Teddy. The worst of them all.
That kid, we'll talk about him next episode.
Should have never got married. You don't think Jack should have married? Teddy should have never got married.
To a degree that is way further beyond just cheating. I mean, we'll talk about that next episode. Okay, we haven't even finished the Marilyn and Frank nakedness.
Sorry.
So.
Wait, pause. So should we go down the line for the in-laws?
Okay, so A number one, Joe Jr. never got to get married, and he would have been the best freaking husband other than Bobby, and that's so sad.
That's
he would have been
so
he
sad.
Might
have been a great dad.
He literally might have been the best dad. I think he might have been a better husband and dad than Bobby, legit.
Honestly, because the way that he treated Teddy
and his mother.
That might have been one of the reasons
father.
Why the affair happened in the first place, because he probably
he
was really,
a good dad.
Yeah, he probably was really good with her kids.
Yeah.
And she swooned.
Okay, so sadly, Joe Jr. never got to get married. Jackie did not cheat.
A surprise for all of you coming at us in the DMs asking to hear all about Jackie cheating on Jack.
Obviously, I was not alive in 1960, but from everything that I've read, and I've read a lot
on Jackie.
A lot. I have not seen anything. She was not a virgin when she got married, as were all the Kennedy girls. But
did we tell the elevator story in a...
I don't think so.
I think we cut it.
Yeah, it was in a deleted scene for Patreon, I think.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
But people say that
the
she
first
only
time was the passionate. Love. And that didn't end up well for her. And so she made more calculated decisions thus far. After that,
henceforth.
Yeah, there you go.
And decided, whatever, then.
It's not for me.
So I'll marry for the career, for the life.
Oh my gosh. One time, Jackie, like, embarrassingly was like bashful and admitted that she did enjoy being desired, which only makes me think of me.
I'm like, okay, but who doesn't enjoy being desired?
Well, then Ethel goes, well, you should have never gotten married then. Ethel had a Rose Kennedy type of mentality. And I feel like she was also a little too insecure to totally let herself. Like, her and Bobby did have a lot more genuine emotion and everything in their relationship than a lot of the other Kennedy marriages. But Bobby had so much more to give, and Ethel wouldn't let herself. I think she was too insecure.
Yeah, and I can so see that, like, with the... The Skakel way was to not be vulnerable and to not show
way more
any
than the
sort
Kennedys.
Of weakness. Way more than the Kennedys.
Yeah.
The Kennedys were freaking, wore their heart on their sleeve compared to the Skakels.
Yeah.
And Jack was terrified to do it.
Yep.
Jack couldn't do it. Rose would be terrified to do it.
And so Ethel was literally like, I'm not going to be caught with my freaking pants down.
Yeah. It was that. For sure.
She just never went there.
She needed to be strong.
Yeah.
And honestly, Ted needed to marry someone like that. And he married someone with their heart on their sleeve.
Ugh. So tragic. Anyways, you'll hear about that.
So then,
who did we
get? Nobody with Rosemary. Nobody with Kit. Oh, yeah, Billy.
Billy never cheated.
I don't think so. He
Billy didn't have time to cheat. Literally 5 months. What was it?
Oh.
So sad.
Okay, then... Eunice and Sarge, I don't think there was anything there.
That's
nuts. I mean, maybe something, and I just don't know about it, but...
Definitely Sarge wasn't a serial cheater.
No.
I feel like we would know about that.
Yeah. And like I feel like he was more buttoned up and puritanical than Bobby was.
I don't know. I don't know enough about him.
It just really seems
but
like it.
But I feel like, yeah, if they're singing Marilyn O'Marilyn at... And
the Shrivers are
astounded, absolutely like, what are you doing?
Beside themselves.
I'm sure they were more buttoned up than Joe Sr.'s kids. Like, come on. They were more buttoned up.
Yeah, exactly. And he was
like Bobby
the most, remember, he was the most Catholic.
Yeah.
Alongside Eunice and even more than Bobby.
And I feel like even though Bobby didn't partake in, like, that wasn't his personality and he was too convicted for that, being around it definitely desensitizes
you. Are
for
going
you.
To
like,
be
just
more
less
comfortable
scary. It's
for
less
sure. Everyone around you has crossed the Rubicon.
Exactly. And then Pat, obviously Peter had,
invented
was a sex
the
addict
game.
And had major issues.
And then
a poor child.
Bobby,
and Bobby.
Ethel? No.
Really?
I didn't see anything like that. And
I
don't think she
so
had.
See her cheating.
I think just like.
But also, she never got remarried. So that's wild to me as well.
And just like Billy, I don't think she had time, but for a divorce.
Yeah. Bringing 11 children.
So. And she had so much fun and fulfillment with her kids. I feel like she didn't have that like need like a
also,
lot of the
yeah,
other ones
it was,
did.
When did you have time, truly? Because you would have had time when the kids got older. And.
She didn't move on. Yeah.
When her marriage was over.
Right. That's what I'm saying. She didn't move on. And she could have. Like, I feel like she just didn't have that desire. Like, Bobby fulfilled that in her. And she like,
had lived
her identity
out.
Was her, a mom at that point. Like, Rose would have never cheated. Like, Rose would have never remarried, probably.
No,
she
I
had
agree.
Her kids and she was
yes,
done.
Yeah,
like, she would not have wanted to go have sex.
A second life. Yeah.
And Ethel is literally the same. And she's like, yeah, well, you should, if you wanted to be desired, you shouldn't have gotten married. That's your own freaking fault. And then.
That's, yeah, and Pat didn't get remarried. I wonder if Jean would have. That's so crazy to me.
And then Jean, Steve definitely did cheat a lot.
She probably cheated once.
Uh-huh. And then.
Teddy was a serial cheater and Joan.
Joan. Ooh, question mark. I just read so much about her and I did not see that. Joan was an alcoholic.
And you would have thought that would have brought a little bit of questionable decisions.
But honestly,
way.
when
Maybe
I read
so
about it.
She was so depressed and so insecure.
Yes.
She was herself out there enough.
She drank a lot alone in her house. That is horrifically sad. Well, on that note, as much as they got along, Marilyn and Frank did argue from time to time. Once, she almost absentmindedly walked naked into a poker game he was having with friends, which infuriated him. Quote,
"Get your fat ass back in your room,"
he scolded her. Always the charmer. However, he could never stay angry at her for long. He truly loved Marilyn, though he was not in love with her, and he understood her frailties. Obviously, she was weak and delicate, traits he was not usually fond of in a woman. He would never allow any of his women to share the luxury of vulnerability, but with Marilyn, it was different. She was special. After that poker game incident, when his friends had departed, Sinatra went back into her bedroom, as Marilyn later remembered it, quote, "kissed me on the cheek and made me feel like a million. From then on, I always dressed up for him, whether or not anyone was coming over." She dressed up.
She got dressed.
From then on, I always dressed up for him.
Oh,
meaning
gosh.
Clothes. But it's like, dude, it's that. So same stupid Jack thing of like, and Joe Sr., they feel like they have to be a certain way in front of other men. And then later they're like apologizing. And it's like, whatever.
They just like never grew out of that like high school peer pressure.
Yes.
Mentality.
Yes.
But I think it's because like the reason that well, part of it is like obviously immaturity and you just don't realize the severity of the decisions you're making and making other people feel a certain way and all that.
Right.
But also I think part of it is like the isolated world of high school. Like you are with those people all day, every day for years on end. And when you're in an industry like that, it's the same type of...
You feel like your reputation is like so massive, like such a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally with
and they're
people.
All people who like have huge... These are people who have huge egos. Like
huge egos.
They're just
and huge
not
egos because
well
they
acclimated.
Are extremely... Insecure in there's some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, there's something missing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At the end of April, Marilyn decided to take another apartment in Los Angeles. It was then that she learned the news that her friend, Pat Kennedy Lawford, was pregnant with her fourth child. Quote,
"I remember Pat saying, I don't even know how to tell Marilyn this news, considering what's going on in her life. I'm afraid it'll make her even sadder."
Wait, Pat said that to a friend?
Pat said this to another relative.
"I already have three kids. She just wants one." Of course, she had no choice but to tell her when Marilyn was back in Los Angeles. By that time, she was about 6 months pregnant. She told me later that when Marilyn laid eyes on her, she jumped into the air with excitement. Then she wrapped her arms around Pat and started to cry. She was so happy. It added another dimension, I think, to Pat's friendship with Marilyn when she realized that Marilyn was able to put aside her own sadness. At least in the moment, and share in Pat's joy.
Oh my gosh.
And Lawrence Lemer says they had a surface level friendship. Bull crap.
There's no way that they had a surface level friendship. You don't.
That's what I'm saying.
Check in on your friend that often when they are that big of a burden because you have a surface level friendship. You don't.
And then
hold
care
their hair
about her
while
emotions.
They're throwing up and make sure they get home safely from the hotel and then. Clean their shirt for them and then have your husband go deliver it for them because of a surface level friendship.
Because
you don't
if
even do that for like a decently good friend.
Right. And if you're surface level friendshipping in a scenario like that, you're partying just as hard. And Pat wasn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not.
And Peter was disgusted by
it. You're not sober holding her hair back and like.
No.
You know what I mean? That's a friend.
Yes, that's a friend. Exactly. Yeah. If it's a surface level, you're both. Wasted.
Busted. Yeah. You're sharing the toilet.
Or at least expecting them to do it next weekend, you know?
Yeah.
That it
Even
would be way
then,
more
though,
equal.
That's like a roommate situation, which is not surface level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or not as surface. I mean, they just, they had emotional.
Sense, but they were
They had emotional
bonded.
Connection.
Yeah.
Pat told the relative, quote,
"I think she's a wonderful woman and would make such a great mother. I pray every night that she has a child soon. I know it would change her life if she had someone else to be worried about."
That's so sad. And you said that most likely the reason that she kept having miscarriages was because of the drugs and alcohol.
That's a theory. Oh, another story that gives proof that they had an emotional connection, that Pat really freaking cared about her friend Marilyn and that was not a surface level friendship. Pat was having like a little luncheon tea with a bunch of girls one day at her house, and they were all out on the back patio chatting, and Marilyn showed up a little bit later than everybody else. And she walked in and Pat like went in to get her and answered the door. And Marilyn was like acting kind of weird. And she was like, will you go, how about this? You go out there and tell everyone that I've arrived and see how they react. And if it's not a good response, then I won't go out there. And Pat is like, wait, what? Like, you're Marilyn Monroe, but like,
you're not at my house.
That important. Like, just
you're not the president.
Go to the freaking party. But she like could tell how paranoid she was acting and how like delusionally self-important she was, like
grandiose.
Yeah. Carrying on the conversation, it just kept getting more and more like Pat kind of realized, okay, maybe you shouldn't go outside because they're going to know something's wrong with you. Like, yeah.
Marilyn Monroe was trying to protect Marilyn.
Yeah. Like, I know Norma Jean. These people don't know Norma Jean. They only know Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be very alarming and very much a spectacle. They're probably going to tell other people about it.
They're going to talk to me about it. I'm going to have to.
It's going to be awkward for me. I'm going to be like, how do I handle this as the host?
So then Pat leaves the rest of her guests outside to fend for themselves. And she just led Marilyn into their like little bar area. And they just sat down at the bar top and had a drink, just the two of them, and kind of chatted and just spent time together. And then Marilyn went back home. And Pat just left the rest of her guests on the porch because Marilyn needed her.
Yeah, that's so precious.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to me that Pat was like the least maternal and motherly, but she's so like literally mother. But I guess maybe she was very comfortable as like the role of big sister.
Yes. She was a lot more comfortable with adults, I feel like, or being the friend.
And she felt like, yeah, Marilyn was like her younger sister, not a child. I also don't think that Pat would just even be as attuned to Marilyn's emotions and bad days. Like, when you are really close to someone who has a mental illness, like,
right.
I feel like you have to be pretty attuned to them and understand their cues and, like, who they are.
Otherwise, you're just like, dude, what the heck is her problem?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, if you're just surface level and, like, you casually hang out, she's not going to register within the 2 minutes to bring her in that, like,
Marilyn's not well.
You're not doing well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
it's
then
not
care
a good
enough
state
to take
today.
Care of her and not just be like, what's yes. going on? Are you okay? Like, you should go home.
Right.
Like, they were close enough that Pat, like, knew how to navigate the situation mm-hmm. in a way that would make it bigger and more of a spectacle, but also wouldn't hurt Marilyn's feelings.
Yep.
And, like, kind of played along with the delusion
mm-hmm.
to, like,
yeah,
safely.
Of like,
exit.
Oh yeah, maybe you shouldn't go outside.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. She was a freaking good friend. That's what.
Yeah.
Okay, this is good. Ready.
Mm-hmm.
Quote: during this time, as mentioned earlier, Marilyn rekindled her romance with Frank Sinatra. It's not known how Joe DiMaggio felt about Marilyn and Frank, or even if it mattered. Frank was still attracted to Marilyn and, according to those who knew him well, couldn't resist her. Milt Evans said, quote,
he was in love with her. No doubt about it.
That's Peter's manager.
Milton Evans, yes. Quote,
by 1961, though, his feeling about her was more protective than passionate. I remember there was an incident involving President Kennedy, who was new in office at the time. Peter and I arranged a luncheon for Kennedy, and Frank was invited.
Always Milt on the outskirts.
We had a special chef flown in from New York to cook fettuccine Alfredo, veal piccata, and a salad and ice cream at the end. Sinatra's secretary called at the last minute and said he couldn't make it, that he had a cold. I was astonished. This is JFK. He can't stand up JFK. I knew Frank loved that guy. He had campaigned for him, organized his inaugural entertainment, so it seemed strange. I found out later that what happened was that Marilyn was staying with him for the weekend and had left the house without telling him where she was going. He was frantic with worry. So he spent the day driving around trying to find her. And he did. She was out shopping. So that shows you how much he cared about her. If he was willing to miss a luncheon with the president so that he could figure out what the hell happened to Marilyn.
Oh my gosh.
They all freaking cared about each other. It was not
surface
one level. Man for himself, like dog eat dog. No.
They were like a full found family. They were like, because they really put each other in each other's shoes and they each kind of were in each other's shoes.
Right.
None of them really had family.
They needed people to look care. Out for them and to care.
Mm-hmm. Anyone to care.
Yeah. And so they knew
what that felt like and took the responsibility mm-hmm. on for themselves.
Yeah. Rupert Allen confirmed, quote,
I always thought of Frank and Marilyn as star-crossed lovers. In a different time and place, they would have been together. He loved her a lot. However, by 1961, she was in so much turmoil. I think he was annoyed with her a lot of the time. He just thought she should have worked harder to pull it together. So, yes, sometimes she pissed him off. Also, Sinatra certainly didn't want to be involved with anyone who would be considered weak or vulnerable.
And Marilyn was the picture of both. Oh, it's so sad too because, yeah, Marilyn was extremely far gone by that point. It's
like no Pat one could Peter, have been in a marriage with her. It nothing.
I don't think it would
point.
Have stopped her.
No.
Drug and alcohol.
Definitely not.
So it's like she could have just OD'd in while they were still in the marriage.
Yeah.
Or got a divorce and then she died. Like
her I just don't think that
fairly said at that point. If Frank and Marilyn would have gotten together or Pat and Peter would have been friends with Marilyn a decade and a half before, like her life could have turned out completely differently.
For sure.
She'd just been living like that for so long.
Mm-hmm. She was an addict at that point. Yeah. And I think that her mental illness also was clearly exacerbated by her drugs and alcohol use and was also getting more severe the older she got anyway.
Yes. Also, if she had a freaking different care team, like medical.
Oh my gosh. Team, if she had a different care team, any different care team, she would have been institutionalized immediately and still been alive. They let her die. They just let her die.
Mm-hmm.
They let her die.
They let her die.
There was always new doctors willing to help her into oblivion.
And even like if Frank and Pat and Peter, the people who are truly on her team and like truly cared about her, were intervening for her on her behalf. And even the director that would like come check on her because she was acting weird, sounded weird on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
If those people would have had the knowledge that we have now, like we know the warning signs of it's just so much less taboo and so much easily.
Yeah, you don't think. Well, and back then, honestly, the hospitals that they were putting them in were a lot more rough than they are now.
Yeah.
So if you knew that, it would have been a lot harder of a decision to throw her in there because mm-hmm. you know she's going to be abused and neglected.
I mean, I think it's a hard decision even now.
Still.
Yeah.
But back then, it's like there's not even any laws or anyone. But fun fact, interesting story. Do you remember?
Do you?
Okay, come on. It's not so different anymore. Shut it down. Do you remember the doctor who actually did do what she needed to do for Marilyn?
To inpatient. Yeah.
Yes. That psychiatrist, or I think it was a psychologist. Is it either a psychiatrist or a psychologist? I'm not sure. But she ended up treating Jackie later in life. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And Jackie was pissed when she found out. She was like, you never told me that you were Marilyn's doctor. And she's like, I didn't think it was relevant. She's like, how not? It's the most relevant thing of my life. Everyone knows what I went through with Jack and Marilyn. She said that.
Straight up?
She said that.
To her doctor?
Yes.
So it was
but
just like a very...
she ended up continuing her treatment with her. I think she was a good doctor.
Yeah.
But she was pissed. She's like, you didn't tell me you treated Marilyn.
That's kind of shocking to me that she was so confrontational. She must have.
Yeah, I think after Jack died, she had to really, really.
Start fighting.
Yeah. She was on her own, dude.
Mm. It's so weird to look back on history and think about if they knew then what we know now.
Mm-hmm.
But also if we took into consideration now what they knew back then.
Oh, it's crazy. Like, I mean,
so
we had to do
ways.
That with Rosemary.
Yeah. But I mean, with everything, it's just like even that way of life.
It changes a lot thinking about it.
Yeah. Like and they were so much more connected. Society, neighbors, people.
Yeah.
We need to, like, it's just cool to see what was better back then.
You're right.
That's not as good now. And what's better now that wasn't back then.
So the happy birthday performance. Perhaps Marilyn needed the president in her life now more than ever. After all, she was rattled at this time by a series of events that had occurred just a month earlier. In February, Marilyn had gone to Mexico to purchase furnishings for her new home. While she was there with Pat Newcomb and Eunice Murray, it again became clear that she was being followed by FBI agents. The agents had it in their heads that she was involved with someone named Fred Vanderbilt Field, who apparently served 9 months in prison for not naming communist friends. He moved to Mexico in 1953. Now, all these years later, a friend of a friend introduced him and his wife to Marilyn, and voila, the FBI was tracking her every move in Mexico. For a woman who was already thought to be borderline paranoid schizophrenic by her doctor, such a pursuit had to have been extremely frightening. There are actually many allegations presented as fact in the FBI files concerning Monroe and Field, none of which appear to be true and none of which, therefore, are worth enumeration. In these same FBI files that detail her every move in Mexico, there is mention of her meeting with Bobby Kennedy in October 1961. She was definitely being watched, and she knew it. So then it goes into the happy birthday performance, but it's like interesting to think about where Marilyn was mentally, like leading into the happy birthday performance and what she could have been wanting to get out of that. Because you think about Jackie marrying Onassis, and if it was truly out of this fear and this need of protection, and like Jackie went from having the Secret Service to not having the Secret Service, and her husband was shot in the head, and then Bobby was shot in the head. You know what I mean?
She had two little kids.
And she had two little kids, and that drove her to marry Onassis. And think about Marilyn. She's got no one. She is being followed by the FBI. She's got paranoid, schizophrenic, borderline.
She's already had a night with Jack. Like, it's not that it's that. She's not like that delusional.
Right.
She's delusional. She's not so. It's not
just
like
coming up with
some random girl that has this dream that she's going to meet this random celebrity that they're going to get married and it's all going to be. It is, in a sense, like at her fingertips.
Right. And she may have felt like I really need this protection. So she's like, screw my freaking career. Who cares what MGM has to say or whatever, whoever, 20th Century Fox. I'm going to die because, first of all, I don't want to live. And
I'm
second,
lonely.
Yeah. And second,
I don't have the finances to fund the Secret Service.
Yeah. People are following me. Like, straight up, people are following me. I need the Secret Service. I need the most powerful man to tell everyone else to back off of me.
Like, I am alone and that's lonely, but I'm also alone and that's terrifying.
And that's dangerous. So that's something else to think about why she would have degraded herself like that for that performance.
Like, what was the reward?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe so the reward was a little bit more.
Yeah. I'm like, what's the reward? Like, why would she be doing this? And I'm like, for the most iconic moment in history, no.
I didn't have any of those things in my mind.
Divine intervention on the script.
But it is true. Think about it. What would be her reward? The Secret Service. Being safe, maybe. So then I mentioned in the episode too that there's rumors of like what happened after that performance and if she slept.
Like hopping into bed with both Kennedys.
Exactly. So here's what Tara Borelli has to say about that. At the party, Marilyn walked up to the president and said,
"This is my former father-in-law, Isidore Miller."
Then, embarrassed for a second, she said,
"I'm so sorry. I should have said, happy birthday, Mr. President. But I was so excited about Dad, I introduced him first."
It was that impersonal. As though Marilyn and Jack didn't really know each other at all. Marilyn spent maybe 5 minutes with JFK and Bobby, if that long. For the rest of the party, she doted on her former father-in-law. 77 years old, he was tired. She managed to get him a chair.
"Sit down, Dad, please,"
she begged him. Then she knelt beside him to talk. It has been reported numerous times over the years, thanks to the FBI's report of the evening in its files, that Marilyn spent the night with JFK at the Carlyle Hotel after the show. Even more sensationally, it's also been reported that after JFK was finished with her, he sent her over to the room next door, where she then had sex with Bobby. Marilyn's actual itinerary for that night was as follows. The show started at 8 p.m. Marilyn didn't get on stage until at least 1 o'clock, being 35th of 39 appearances made on stage that night. Did you know that?
I thought Marilyn was the single performer.
So did I. Wow. So how many hours into the show? 5 hours into the show?
And that's what she sacrificed her career for? Was one of
39. Then she went to the Krim party with Isidore Miller. Afterward, she accompanied him to his home in Brooklyn. She kissed him goodbye at the elevator and began to walk away. He recalled that just before he got into the elevator, she turned around and said,
"Dad, come back to the coast with me tomorrow."
He smiled.
"Later, Marilyn,"
he promised.
"Maybe in November."
She blew him a kiss and walked away. And that would be the last time he would ever see her. She got home at about 4 a.m, where she was met by her friend, James Haspiel, who had earlier attended the performance. He recalled, quote,
"I looked at Marilyn, not knowing that this would be our last time together. Now, she wasn't on stage. She was here, just at arm's length away from me, and I could touch her. Her face was incredibly beautiful, movingly vulnerable. Her hair looked like white spun gold. My eyes descended to the rhinestone-like gems sewn onto her dazzling gown, now eliciting flickers of light, those beams bouncing off flesh-colored material, encasing her magnificent body."
Oh my gosh, I forgot. She's wearing that with her freaking father-in-law, ex-father-in-law.
One might argue that somewhere between dropping off Isidore Miller and meeting up with James Haspiel, Marilyn could have slipped off for a quick interlude at the Carlyle with JFK. But all of my years of research indicate that this did not happen. That said, Marilyn did not do a very good job of hiding her feelings for the commander-in-chief. Rupert Allen, who was present at the after-party, recalled,
"When Marilyn finally moved close to the president, I suddenly realized that she had fallen in love with him. It frightened me because I knew Marilyn never did anything by halves."
Neither did Jackie, and she didn't go to the performance. She was, in fact,
wherever she wanted to be.
This is interesting. This is one of the Lawford's neighbors on that beach property, the Santa Monica house. It would say the actor Jeffrey Hunter and his family. And then on the other side, there was a vacant lot. Pat always joked to Marilyn that she had the house blown to smithereens when she learned that a family of Republicans had purchased it. Matthew Fox was a friend of Jeffrey Hunter's son, Steele. And this is his recounting of the summer of the year of 1961 when the two boys were 8. So it's like the neighbor's son and his best friend when they were 8 years old. And his remembrance of the Lawford parties and seeing Judy Garland, Marilyn.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Quote,
"These parties, man, you've never seen anything like them,"
recalled Fox.
"The Kennedys had style. I mean, those people knew how to throw a party, let me tell you. Sometimes they would have afternoon barbecues, which I loved. If I had a sleepover with Steele, I would wander over there the next day and just snoop around. Once, I saw Angie Dickinson baking in the sun in a bikini that was so revealing, I think it was the first time."
Well, I don't know if I should.
I'm like picturing first the time he was over
aroused.
Here.
Correct, for Literally sure. It's the Sandlot. If the Sandlot was happening next to the Lawfords,
he's like,
I'd always see Mrs. Lawford,
Pat,
tossing a football around with her brother, the president. Bobby would be there, Teddy. Judy Garland would be there, doing the twist on the sand in her bare feet, just about as drunk as she could be. And there'd be Frank Sinatra with Dean Martin and Sammy Davis with Peter walking on the beach, chain-smoking like mad, and tossing their cigarette butts into the ocean as if to say, screw Mother Nature. As far as we're concerned, the whole world is our ashtray.
He talked out of the corner of his mouth like a gangster.
And Marilyn. I think from 1961 on, she was there a lot. I remember I would just see this shock of blonde hair from a distance, and I'd run over to stare at her up close.
Fox remembered Marilyn as, quote,
the most beautiful woman, no, goddess I have ever seen.
As she stood on the beach, always shielding her eyes against the spray and the sand, he recalls her walking on the hot sand with Pat's dogs and stopping to admire the deep blue ocean, so flecked with white caps. Sometimes she would toss a ball into the water and then squeal with delight as one of the animals retrieved it and returned it to her. Quote,
once, I walked out on the beach with my little brownie camera and asked if I could take a picture of her,
continued Matthew Fox.
She said, oh no, not today. I don't have any makeup on and I don't even look like Marilyn Monroe. Come back tomorrow and I'll be all ready for you. So the next day I went back with my camera. She was made up as if getting ready to make a movie. Heavy mascara, red lipstick, big hair teased out to there, the whole Marilyn bit. I said, wow, just look at you. And she said, I did all this for you, Maddie, so let's take that picture now, shall we? And we did. I got a few pictures, and then Pat took a picture of the two of us together. Afterward, Marilyn kissed me on the forehead and said, you come back in about 20 years and we'll be better friends, okay? Then she winked at me and walked back into the house. And I thought, oh my God, I am in love with Marilyn Monroe.
That is the best story I've ever
That's
heard.
That's literally the Sandlot
I've ever heard.
Even then, I knew that most people in the world didn't have these kinds of experiences.
And I thought, man, what a life.
What a life. And Pat is just like, I'll take
sure,
your picture.
I'll take it. Yeah.
Like,
isn't it bizarre that the Kennedys gave Marilyn Monroe a taste of normalcy? Like,
oh my God.
The Kennedys yeah. gave her a sense of what a family is like mm-hmm. and
a place to show up without your makeup.
Yes.
Where you don't have to look like Marilyn Monroe.
Toss a ball to your dog and go to the barbecue. Oh,
and then
gosh.
They just let With this random neighbor kid
yeah.
who like has no business being there. He's not even the neighbor, actually. He's the friend of the neighbor kid. And
which is probably like why he has the balls to run up to her.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because you notice the neighbor is not there. He's like, I'd run over and snoop.
That's so funny.
And honestly, good freaking decision, kid.
Yeah.
Good decision. Take that freaking opportunity.
Take your moment.
She's like, come back tomorrow. And she literally spent hours doing her makeup so this little neighbor kid could take a freaking photo.
With actual Marilyn Monroe, not Norma Jean.
It's like great and sad too that like she felt like she had to do that. But then also she's like, I care about this kid having a great experience and I'm going to give him Marilyn Monroe. Which brings me to...
Are celebrities still like... Marilyn Monroe wasn't just a celebrity either. She wasn't.
She was Marilyn Monroe. You know what I mean? She yeah. became.
Yeah, but I'm saying that a celebrity would do that now.
True.
Also, would an 8-year-old boy care like that now?
Probably not, no. Not like this little kid cared about Marilyn Monroe, no.
But also I'm saying the like... innocence back then. Like the Sandlot. Seeing a girl in a freaking one piece.
Yeah.
Was not earth shattering. It's not earth shattering anymore.
That's true. That's sad.
It's sad. Wow. Yeah. If you we're a baby boomer. You are a lucky son of a gun. You are the last gen.
The last of the golden years.
And really the first and the last. Like, that is the perfect little blip in time.
For real.
No world war.
After the,
No depression.
After the trauma, before the trauma. I mean, I'm sure you all have your own, but. It's been argued that Marilyn's upcoming prospects were so promising, she couldn't possibly have taken her own life. She supposedly had too much to live for. However, what was probably going on inside her mind had little correlation to those factors. When we consider her last moments on Earth, we need to focus on an unwell brain, not simply the enticing rewards of a movie star's existence. Marilyn's day-to-day happiness was not affected by a desire for more fame, more wealth, more success. To believe that her will to live could have been reclaimed by finishing Something's Got to Give or even by a million-dollar contract with Fox is absurd. To do so is to greatly underestimate the formidable opponent she faced, her own mental illness. To accept this unfortunate truth doesn't negate all that this woman was in her lifetime. It just forces one to accept that Marilyn's story isn't simply one of glamour and fame. In fact, it may not even be a story about Marilyn Monroe at all. This is the story of a girl named Norma Jean Mortensen. She thrived despite seemingly insurmountable obstacles and almost impossible odds. She created and became a woman more fascinating than even she believed possible. And in the face of her own failing mind, she battled to keep that creation alive. Not for her, but for us. Indeed, Marilyn Monroe did exist. Even though the woman inside her was at times doubtful of that fact, we knew it better than she did. She spent so much of her energy, her own will, projecting an image of impossible beauty and ultimate joy. Yet, as the end neared, her experience of who she truly was drifted farther and farther from that ideal, until she found it impossible to pretend anymore. Her choice, as awful as it may have been, was this. Admit to the world that Marilyn Monroe had become nothing more than smoke and mirrors, or die. On August 5th, 1962, Marilyn Monroe gave the world all she had left to give. The knowledge that she was, and always would be, ours.
Join us here next week to hear all about the one true mark on the Kennedy family legacy, Chappaquiddick Island, and the murder of Mary Jo Kopechne.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please give us a review on Apple, rate us on Spotify, and share Blood and Business with a friend or a sibling. If you'd like to support the show, the best way is to become a patron of Blood and Business. You will get bonus content every month, including a monthly bonus episode, interactive main episodes, and behind-the-scenes footage.
To keep up with us day-to-day, you can follow us at Blood and Business on Instagram and TikTok. You can find the link for Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon in the show notes below. Thank you so much for the support, and we will see you back here next week for your regularly scheduled programming on
Blood and Business.
Is that not horrific?
So he's saying that she died, like she killed herself while she was still Marilyn Monroe, like before she lost that?
Before the facade was revealed. Yeah. Before the world realized she was not Marilyn Monroe. At least not anymore. She couldn't keep it up anymore. Her pants were ripped, you know? Her white blouse was soiled. She couldn't. Yeah. She just couldn't manage it anymore. at this point in her life. By 1960, Norma Jean wanted nothing more than to kill Marilyn Monroe. And by 1962, Marilyn Monroe killed Norma Jean. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
It's like she knew these two people cannot coexist in this body anymore. Like someone had to win.
Yeah.
And it's like the wolf.
Like there can only be
one. Which one is going to survive? The one you feed.
The only one can survive.
Kept feeding Marilyn Monroe. The happy birthday performance.
Yeah.
Feeding Marilyn Monroe. Until Marilyn Monroe was bigger than Norma. And it ate her.